if I haven't told you yet, or if you just haven't heard or haven't seen on Facebook or anything, I'll let you know Gracie and I are remodeling a little bit in our house. We're taking out the wall that's between our kitchen and our living room. And it's been an interesting couple days because there's drywall dust everywhere, and there's trim with nails sticking out of it. You know, we have to be careful around the house, and we have to take some things down. And the reason we want to do that is because we want to put a beam up, and we want that space to be open. And the idea there is that it will be more open for having people over for Bible studies, just be more open in general, make it feel like there's more space, right? But in order to get to that place where we have everything nice and trim finished and the drywall textured and perfect and everything painted and clean and done, to get to that point, we first had to tear out the wall. We first had to take a hammer to the drywall, had to take a saw to it. Gracie loves the reciprocating saw. She gets to just saw away at the drywall, and she likes being able to use that tool. And it's fun. But we had to take away something, had to destroy the old, had to take it out, remove it, take it to the dump. We had to do all that in order to get to the point where we could build something better, build something new. That's the way that salvation works as well. First thing we have to do is we have to demolish sin. There's problems throughout the church, and a lot of them are all individual problems, and I mean the church as a whole. People face these issues. There's times when new converts might fall away, or they seem to slide back into their old lives, where they once had some excitement about serving Jesus and about being a new Christian, having that slate wiped clean. There's an excitement about that, and once that goes away, once it's not new and fun anymore, there's a tendency sometimes for those people to lose their souls again, to slide back into their old lives. Sometimes Christians who stay what some people would call faithful, they act one way at church and they act a different way at home. That's a problem. There have been people who will sit in the pew every Sunday morning, but then they might go home and be abusive to their children. There's people who take the Lord's Supper every Sunday with everybody else, but they might go home and abuse a substance. It happens that way. Or maybe they just can't control their tongue. It's an issue. Christians acting one way at church and acting different at home. Sometimes Christians fall into a habit of thinking they can live their lives how they please as long as they make it to church on Sunday. So there's the idea that they want to keep the part of their identity that they hold dear, but they also want to be a Christian at the same time. Where they might want to keep their cuss words. They might want to keep their temper. They might want to keep something like that. Have a hard time letting go of it. But they also want to be seen as a Christian. So they come to church every Sunday. They do all the right things, right? Sometimes believers lose their faith in God because their quality of life does not increase after becoming a Christian. We see that one sometimes too. Where somebody becomes a Christian, and then they go out as a Christian and they face the world again, and all of the same problems are still there. All of the same struggles are still there, and they lose their faith because of that. All these problems come from one place. The idea that you can be a Christian and keep being what you were before, and hold on to a little bit of what you were before. Hold on to a little bit of your old identity. It's not the way that it works. First thing that has to happen when somebody comes to the Lord, The Bible is clear about this. First thing that has to happen is you have to get rid of the old in order to put in the new, right? We, remodeling this house, we had to tear out the wall. It's a load-bearing wall, so we didn't take all of it out. We just took out the drywall. We left all the studs and things that are supporting things, right? And then the contractor will come and do the rest. But for the purposes of our analogy, we had to take out all the things that were in the way, right? We had to take out the old in order to put in the new. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in verse 17, Paul's writing to them about the way that they need to be acting among the Gentile world. He says, "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who, being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you," notice verse 22, "that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness." So we see that there's a process there. You learn about Jesus, then what you have to do is you have to get rid of what you were before you learned about Jesus. You have to get rid of that person who is ignorant about what God wanted you to do. You have to get rid of that person who wanted to hold on to the sins and not let them go. You have to demolish it. You have to get rid of it. In Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5 beginning. Paul writes, "Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience." So he says, you have to put them to death. It's not just, I don't do that anymore, but it's still kind of a part of who I am. You put it to death. It's extreme. He continues in verse 7, "in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them." So he says, you Colossians, you once were like this, but you can't be that way anymore. He says in verse 8, "but now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you've put off the old man with his deeds. You've gotten rid of him, you've demolished it, and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him." So there's a newness of the whole image there, where there's neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave nor free, but Christ is all and in all. So verse 11 there says Christ is the equalizer, but you have to get rid of what you were before in order to become something different. You have to demolish it. In Romans chapter 6, Romans chapter 6, beginning in verse 5, he says, "For if we have been united together in the likeness of his," that's Jesus, "united together in the likeness of his death, certainly we also shall be in the likeness of his resurrection." Notice verse 6, "knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves of sin." It has to be done away with. That's that part where you take it to the landfill and you throw it out of the bed of the truck, right? If we're going to keep the remodeling analogy. It has to be done away with. It has to be demolished. It has to be thrown out. You're done with that part. And you have to take it to the extreme. It's not enough just to say to yourself, "I'm putting that away." Go another step. Get rid of it completely. Get rid of it entirely. Remove yourself from it so far that it's out of your mind, out of your sight. Demolish it. Demolishing sin is a present tense kind of thing. Now, yeah, with removing our wall, we can just remove the wall. All that stuff goes to the landfill. We don't have to think about it anymore, right? We put in the new thing. The old wall isn't going to start growing out of the floor again, right? But that is what sin does. So demolishing sin is a present tense kind of thing. We have to continue in it. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus makes a really interesting point here. Beginning in verse 29, he says, "If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell." So there, Jesus takes it to the extreme, right? In his teaching, he says, if your eye causes you to sin, you pluck it out and you remove it. If your hand causes you to sin, you cut it off and you remove it. Be extreme about it. But notice he doesn't say, if your eye caused you to sin, pluck it out and throw it from you. Or if your hand caused you to sin, cut it off and throw it from you. Because that can happen at any point. He says, if it causes you to sin. So we have to constantly be on guard for that. It's not something like I became a Christian, but my eye is lustful, so I cut it out and I remove it from me. Right? Done. Don't have to worry about it anymore. It's not a past tense thing. It can happen over and over and over again. We have to constantly be on guard for it. We have to constantly be ready to demolish that old man. Remove it. And be renewed. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Beginning in verse 24. Paul writes, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is, notice this, temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore, he says, I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Lest when I've preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." So there is a consistent effort to be disciplined, to bring his body into subjection. Now you could look at that as Paul saying, in order to exercise, I discipline my body, right? If you go to the gym every morning, you should take advice from Jake. But if you go to the gym in the morning, you're disciplining your body, right? You're bringing it into subjection. You're bringing it into the shape that you want it to be in, okay? And you need nutrition. You need a regular exercise program. And you have to be consistent. It's not something you can do once, and then you are suddenly the way you want to be. It's something you have to do constantly. But Paul's saying that's how righteousness and sin work too. You have to constantly be on guard against sin and constantly be disciplining yourself to be righteous. It's not a one and done kind of thing. The reason it's not a one and done kind of thing is that Satan is always looking for ways to build sin back into our lives. Let's go to 1 Peter. First Peter chapter 5. Let's actually start in verse 6. He says, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober And be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, in verse 9, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. Satan doesn't have to eat, doesn't have to sleep, doesn't have to pay his mortgage. He doesn't have to work on anything other than getting you to sin. He's constant. It's like you take a rock and you have a dripping water faucet, right? Put the rock under there. It's going to take years, but eventually that constant dripping, it's going to get through. Right? He's constantly nipping at your heels. He's constantly trying to get you to trip, trying to get you to stumble, putting things in your way, giving you opportunities to sin. You thought about that? He's constantly doing that. So we have to constantly be ready, be sober, and be vigilant, watching for him, watching for ourselves to start to get drawn into that temptation. And we have to be willing to... Ron was wondering why I had a bulldozer on the screen at the very beginning. It's because that's what I have to do to sin. I bulldoze it. It's gone. It's in shambles. We have to be willing to take it that far. The old and the new also cannot coexist. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 8, he says really important words right at the beginning. He says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord." Keep that in your mind. "Walk as children of light," he says, "for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret." So there's not any kind of a dim lighting coexistence where you can have Jesus a little bit and you can still be worldly a little bit. It doesn't work that way. You have to bulldoze the worldly part. You have to demolish the sin. He says, "You were once darkness, but now you are something different. You are the opposite. You are light. There is no darkness for you anymore. You don't get that option. You are now light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." There's no walking as children of dim lighting. Walk as children of light. And then he even takes it so far as to say, don't even have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. He says, yeah, don't do them, but also don't have any fellowship with them at all. You can't have both. They cannot coexist together. In Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16, in verse 13, Jesus is finishing up the parable of the unjust steward. And his main point here is about riches, but he brings in a principle that is very important for us. He says, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon," or "you cannot serve God and riches" in some translations, okay? "You also cannot serve God and yourself." It doesn't work that way. You have to be willing to demolish the old and bring in the new. And part of that is getting rid of your own will and replacing it with God's will. And it's not easy. It's very, very difficult. Sometimes preachers, people who are leading Bible studies, that kind of thing, they'll say that. You remove the old man, you put on the new man, but we tend to kind of forget how difficult that actually is to do in practice. It means you're going to be giving up habits that you've formed over years. It means you're going to be fighting with yourself about the way that you think all the time. It means that you're going to have to change the way that you react to certain situations. It means you're going to have to find a way to change your emotions sometimes. And that's hard to do. Very hard to do. And it takes a lot of introspection. It takes a lot of self-control. But we can't give up on that. And we can't just let that mindset of I am the way that I am seep into our minds. And the world is going to tell you, Jesus takes you as you are. Yes, he does. But he turns you into something different. And you have to do that with him. You have to let him change you. We have to demolish the old, demolish the sin, get rid of it, so that the new can exist. But you can't just leave it there. Because if you don't replace, go back to this wall analogy, if we just tear out the wall and we don't replace it with anything, Greg, you know what happens when you do that to a load-bearing wall? What happens? The roof's going to fall in. Yeah. You can't do that with sin either. You can't just get rid of sin and have nothing, because the roof's going to, sin's going to fall back in. You have to replace it with righteousness. So number one, otherwise sin will come back. You must build righteousness where you demolish sin, otherwise sin will come back. In Matthew chapter 12, in verse 43, Matthew chapter 12, verse 43, Jesus says, when an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places seeking rest and he finds none. Then he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it empty, swept, and put in order. So the evil spirit was removed. That person's mind is now empty, swept, and in order, but empty. So what does the unclean spirit do? It says in verse 45, then he goes and he takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. So shall it also be with this wicked generation. You can't just leave it empty. You have to fill it with something good. Otherwise, there's a space for that sin to come back into your life over and over and over again. It'll come back in. You can kick it out again. If you leave it empty, it's going to come back. And it's going to happen as many times as you kick it out, unless you fill that void with something good, unless you fill it with righteousness. When we build our righteousness, we have to build it on the right foundation. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 4. Peter says, coming to him, that's Jesus, as to a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by God and precious. You also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house. Notice that we're being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Therefore, it is also contained in the scripture. Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he who believes on him will by no means be put to shame. Therefore, to you who believe, he is precious, but to those who are disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone, and a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. They stumble, being disobedient to the word to which they also were appointed. Then he says, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. Notice that. He called you out of darkness. Going back to that, you can't have both of them. He called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Then You have to build on that foundation that Jesus provided for you. So Jesus being the chief cornerstone, we build upon his foundation. In another place it says we build upon the apostles and the prophets as our foundation. We build upon the word. We build upon the teaching that God has given us. And that's how we fill ourselves with that righteousness. That's how we build that righteousness within ourselves. And then when I build my righteousness and Kenneth builds his righteousness and Ron builds his righteousness, then we begin to be built into a building for God. That's how that process works. But if in any church, if we have members who are half and half, or trying to be half and half, even though you can't be, that's not going to work. And it's not going to be built together on righteousness on that foundation. That's part of the reason the personal accountability is so important, because it affects everything. So we have to demolish sin. We have to fill it with righteousness. That leads into this point. Build righteousness among the righteous. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19 beginning, he says, "Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God." That's when those stones are starting to link together, being built up into a building of righteousness for the Lord, right? We're not strangers anymore. We're not foreigners. We're fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. That's awesome. We are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. That's an honor. And it's really cool to think about. That God wants to dwell among us. He wants to dwell in us. And we're being built on our righteousness, on that foundation of Jesus the cornerstone and the foundation of the apostles and prophets, we're being built into a dwelling place for him in the Spirit. But that cannot happen if even one Christian's attitude becomes, "I want to maintain my old identity. I want to hold on to a little bit of that sin." It doesn't work that way. Each and every one of us has to be willing to bulldoze it, demolish it, become something new, holy, even though it's difficult, fight that battle, become something different than what you were. And then you will be built together, not a stranger or a foreigner anymore, be built together into a spiritual dwelling place for God. That's how that process has to go. And it's on each and every one of us. That's what I have for you this morning. We'll have an invitation song. If you've been wishy-washy, the darkness and the light, half and half, a little bit of both, it's time for that to end. Your brothers in Christ can help be your bulldozer if it's needed. That's part of what this invitation is for. And then also, if you haven't obeyed the gospel and you need to, it's time for this as well. So, if you have a need, please let it be made known while we stand and sing.